This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
Savannah, also the setting for one of my all-time favorite movies, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. John Cusack, one of his best. All right, let's get to what we're going to talk about today. Our long regional nightmare is over, Alec. Rod Brind'Amour is back. Dotted line, signed. Three-year deal. Look, he was never going to coach anywhere else. This is where I thought he failed, however, in that he never used the leverage that another job could have helped to, I don't know about expedite, but just maybe get a bigger deal.
Could have waited until he got the Jack Adams Award later today, too.
Yeah, they will announce that today. And then maybe, you know, because he wasn't in it for him, and we're gonna listen to all these things this afternoon. He wasn't in it for him. He was in it for his staff, but maybe he could have spun that money back into the staff. I want to hear about Rod getting the staff paid, because Rod is a guy who believes that the other people are more important than him.
We have a special group down here, and for me to do this job to the best of my ability, like, it's important to have the right people around me, and I know what's down here. You know, I know we have the great training staff, equipment people, the coaches. So that's why I think part of it took so long. There's a lot of people had to, you know, we had to figure out. So, you know, we're at that point where we're pretty much done that. And, you know, again, important to me to have the great people around. That's why we have success down here, is all the people that are working in everything, from the, you know, the Dougie, the Billy. I mean, you go down the list, the equipment guys, they all part of what we're doing down here. And so I think that was probably what, to be honest with you, that's taken so long.
That Dougie was Doug Bennett, not Dougie Hamilton. We'll talk about Dougie Hamilton maybe a little bit later on. The numbers in 3 years for Brind'Amour are just fantastic. 120 wins, 66 losses, 20 overtime losses, a 631 point percentage over the course of three seasons. Of course, this year's 714, right? 714 or 713. The Hurricanes finished first in the Central Division. They had no playoffs for 9 straight years, and then 3 years of postseason play. But for the third straight year, didn't end well. Brind'Amour on what it is going to take to take the next step.
We learn a lot. I mean, I think if you're not learning from your failures, if you want to call it that, you're in big trouble. And I think what we learned was, you know, to be the best team, to beat the best team, you can't beat yourself, number one. You can't make, which I thought we did at times this year, in the Tampa series especially. That's basically what I'm referring to. And the margins are so tight, right? Like, there's just, they don't beat themselves. The teams that win the Stanley Cups are not making mistakes. You know, they're comfortable when the game's, you know, uncomfortable, and just being able to stick with what you're doing. And I thought we got away from that a little bit. So we're still a bit of a young group in some ways. We got a great leader in Jordan Staal. He's not a young guy, but our other guys are still kind of learning that. And I think from this year especially, I think we've learned that lesson.
Did he call Jordan Staal old?
It sure sounded like it.
Sounded like he called Jordan Staal old. Remember when we were told that star players make bad coaches? Remember when we were told that? We were told that.
Star players make
bad coaches? Bad coaches. Because in general.
They don't have to do anything.
Right. Yeah, because stars, you just, like, why was Magic Johnson a horrible coach?
Oh, I see what you're
right?
saying.
Star players make bad coaches. Wayne Gretzky wasn't a good coach.
No.
Patrick Waugh, not a good coach, not at the NHL level.
Some people can do, but they can't teach.
Right. Brind'Amour's best skills as a player, and he was a star player.
Yes.
Preparation, attention to detail, work ethic, intelligence. That's what makes a good coach. That's what makes a great coach.
Well, That's the thing about Rod, which I've said a million times. Yes, Rod was an extremely talented player. But he doesn't view himself like that. He thinks he got there because of hard work.
Right.
And attention to detail and all the things that you listed. I would argue there's a lot of talent there.
Oh, that's talent. All but of that is talent.
He maximized the hell out of it. But I think it's different than Wayne Gretzky, who's, you know, touched by God to play hockey and can't tell anybody how to do it. He just knew how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Rod's different that way. It's a different kind of talent. He was a worker. He had to figure the game out, or at least he thought he did.
All of these guys are talented. They're all incredibly skilled. Even the guys you don't think are skilled are incredibly skilled. Brenda Moore's intelligence, his work ethic, his preparation, all of that, that enabled him to take his talent, which was considerable, and make it great. All of that matters. And I've been saying this about Rod for a long time. It's why I never even considered that he wasn't going to be the right coach. It's because he was smart enough to figure out a way to take his talent and make it work in a great way. He scored a ton of goals. He had plenty of 30-goal seasons.
Big ones, too.
Right? Yes, enormous goals. And he was always comfortable in those, as he said, uncomfortable situations.
By the way, I would say that they were a team that was comfortable in uncomfortable situations, for the most part.
Well, I mean,
how many times did they have to come back in games? How many times did they have to score a goal in overtime to win? How many times did they have to score to get a game to overtime?
Right.
I mean, we talked all year about how resilient a club they were.
I think they were a resilient club, and I understand what you're saying. I think what he is talking about is like not coming off your discipline more than anything else. I really think that's what he's discussing, because the Hurricanes, to me, lost the way they lost for one reason. It's that they took too many penalties, and they took too many unnecessary penalties. And that is, I don't know what you attribute that to. Maybe it was just inartfully said. But to me, that's why they lost to Tampa. And you couldn't kill Tampa's power play, because Tampa's power play was goofy good. Just absolutely ridiculous. What I think the Islanders took two penalties in game one and won. And they took five penalties in game two and lost. Huh. Go figure. You take a lot of penalties against the Lightning, you're going to lose.
One of which wasn't a penalty. Either way, they took it. Barry Trotz voiced his displeasure about that.
That was the one about the...
too many men.
Right. They didn't call that penalty on the Lightning.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, you're right. They didn't call it.
They should have. And they scored a goal on it. They're good enough. They don't need extra points.
That was the Islanders taking a penalty. They had less men on the ice.
That's right. They were shorthanded for that goal. So they lost. They gave up two goals while shorthanded. One of them should have been a penalty on Tampa. One more thing about Rod Brind'Amour. We talked to Vincent Trocheck last week. And I wrote this a long time ago about Brind'Amour, and it's cool to hear players articulate the point, because they can do it better than I can because they have experience with it. The number one quality that Brind'Amour has as a head coach is that he makes the players care as much as he does. Here's Trocheck.
What's different about Roddy? It's a good question. It's a tough question. I think it's just his care level is so much higher. It's like he wants to be dressed with us out on the ice playing the game. I mean, he loves this game and he loves this team so much. And it shows just the way he coaches. And he's just an easy guy to talk to. And he obviously played 3 million games in the NHL, so he knows what he's doing, and he knows what it's like to be in our position.
We talked to Trocheck for about, 10, 12 minutes. That was the best right there. And I'm not trying to knock Trocheck. That was the best thing that Trocheck said. It was... You know, if you didn't know Rod as the coach, to me that was illuminating. All right, let's move on to a couple of other topics, because we have a lot more things to do. Alec, not a surprise, the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines behind schedule.
Didn't take into consideration that marine layer, I guess.
I asked Jason Sobel this yesterday. I'm like, we're going to have marine layer, right? Oh, I don't know. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. The most predictable thing in the world is fog in the morning in San Diego. They don't even call it fog. They call it marine layer because it happens basically every day. So 90 minutes late was the delay. Alec, do you have Grayson Sig on your daily fantasy?
No, but he's really smoking the competition right now. He, Patrick Rodgers, and Matthew Wolf, all minus one.
And Francesco Molinari.
They just started.
Yes. They're tied for the lead at one under par. Sig is through four. We are now actually the star-studded trio of Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, and Colin Morikawa, all parred the 10th hole, their first hole of the day. Who's excited? Yes, I'm excited. I'm very excited for the U.S. Open, always. All right, let's I want to move on to some by the way, who are you rooting for, by the way?
Oh, I'm rooting for, I think, a bunch of people. I mean, obviously, I think I'm rooting for Phil Mickelson. I'd love to see him get it.
Right.
I mean, who's not rooting for that? Mm-hmm. Right? I want to see Rory get back in the major winner circle. I feel like these are givens for every major tournament, right?
Yeah.
I am rooting for Xander Schauffele. That's my pick to win this week. I'm rooting for JT Poston because I always root for JT Poston every single week.
Hickory.
That's
go
right.
Hickory.
Go Red Tornadoes. Those are the ones that come to mind immediately for me.
Poston is just one off the lead right now.
Yes, even par. So am I.
All right, before we get to the NBA playoffs, I want to keep it local here for a second. They fell apart at the end of the season, but this was a good educational experience of a year for the Charlotte Hornets. They hit the draft lottery, literally, with LaMelo Ball winning the league's Rookie of the Year award.
Let me ask you this, too, because you started the year coming off the bench. When did you first start thinking, you know what, Rookie of the Year might be a possibility here?
I mean, honestly, way before the league, honestly, when I was playing basketball and then they was talking about the NBA stuff, that's when I knew if I'm a rookie, that's probably one of the accomplishments I could get. And then pretty much the whole bench thing, I mean, I didn't really have too many problems with that because I knew I was going to get in and get some time. So I'm like, the time I'm going to get, I'm obviously going to make something out of it. And then hopefully that lead to other things, which it did. And then everything worked how it should work.
He had an amazing year. He's the face of the franchise. He's one of the faces of the league coming up in the future, and good for the Hornets. But I think they figured out some things about themselves. They know where they're short. They need some size, some legitimate, usable size. Probably need a few more playmakers to sprinkle in the offense. But man, you've got Ball, you've got Bridges. I see some people speculating they should already trade Gordon Hayward. Whatever. I mean, that's possible. Or how about maybe just have a healthy Gordon Hayward? Maybe that would be good since he wasn't really healthy all season long. All right, Alec. How in the world did the Philadelphia 76ers lose to the Hawks last night? First of all, I have two questions. Weren't they at home?
The 76ers were at home, yes.
They were at home? Did the crowd just suck last night?
They must have been terrible. They were very good in the first half when the team was good.
Then
in the second half when the team was bad, they were bad.
Did the crowd choke?
The crowd did not do their job.
Did Doc Rivers forget to tell them to score in the fourth quarter?
Well, he forgot to tell everyone except Seth Curry and Joel Embiid.
Maybe everybody else had tuned out the huddle.
They forgot.
Mm.
Well, it's easy to tune out the huddle when there's no pertinent information to be listened to.
Well, that
in
is
an NBA huddle.
That is true. So what you alluded to was Seth Curry and Joel Embiid were the only players to score a field goal in the second half.
Second half for Philadelphia.
All right, Jay Williams from Get Up, also of course from Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin on ESPN Radio. He says he knows where the blame has to go.
Sometimes I feel like when I watch the 76ers play, they should just charge people $34.99 for a masterclass in how to blow leads. I mean, it's really embarrassing when you think about how talented they are. And what are the Sixers team known to do? Defensively, drawing a line in the sand. You have guys like Ben Simmons, Matisse Thybulle, Joel Embiid when he's engaged. But the issue is here that Doc Rivers is going to have with this team is, can you afford to have Ben Simmons in late game scenarios? And he was 4 of 14 from the free throw line the other
day. But defensively, can you take him
defensively,
out?
Defensively, well, you can't take him out defensively, but offensively, if it goes into hack a Ben strategy, how do you handle that? I mean, when you look at the numbers between Tobias Harris, Joel Embiid, and Ben Simmons in fourth quarters of the last two games, they're abysmal. So this is a character challenge for the 76ers. You need Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris. When you're up by 26 points in the third quarter with 2 minutes left to go in the game, you look at your teammates and you say, there's no way in hell we're going to let this happen again. It just happened game four. You were up 18 points. So at the end of the day, your great players need to lead your organization. I know people can say, hey, what about Doc? There's a history there of him blowing leads as well. But this is on the players. This is on the best players on their team.
I've been saying this for years, Alec. You cannot win anything with Ben Simmons. You have, you know, he's out. He's not your best player because that's Joel Embiid. But he's your second best player. He's one of your franchise guys. Can't shoot. Not only can't shoot, won't shoot. How does that guy help you win? I don't even understand. I understand basketball, right? They keep score. This is how we determine winners, right? Ball goes through hoop.
2 points.
Points are awarded. Sometimes it's two. Sometimes it's three. Sometimes it's one. Ben isn't good at any of them. What are we doing? I just don't think you can win with him as a feature player. I mean, he's a great defender. I'm not even arguing that. He's a super ball handler. But you don't have to guard him. And then, at the end of games, you can just foul him, and he can't even make the free throws. It sounds weird, but I don't even care what I get for him. I don't think I can win with him if I'm the Philadelphia 76ers. Congratulations to Paul George for dragging the Clippers to a Game 5 win at Utah. He did, right?
Yes.
37 points, 16 rebounds, 5 assists. There's a guy who's been maligned. Not coming up in big games, but he was great last night. By
no
the way,
Kawhi.
No Kawhi, right? He's out for the playoffs, probably. Certainly out for this series. Another stunning failure by a home crowd. What are we doing? If you can't, why do home crowds suck? I thought you were supposed to win at home. I thought that automatically meant you were going to win, Alec.
I mean, home court advantage.
Yeah.
Not a thing.
Yeah, not a thing. By the way, this probably has more to do with it. Donovan Mitchell still hobbled. No Mike Conley for Utah. So we didn't get any of those pep talks from Quinn Snyder on the bench. But seriously, that's an enormous, enormous win for the Clippers and really a big win for Paul George personally. You know, yesterday they made it seem like Kevin Durant had cemented his legacy because he had a Kevin Durant-like game. Now, it was great even for Kevin Durant. It was great for anybody, but it was a huge game in a big spot. Well, Paul George just did that. We don't have the referendum on Paul George, right? This was not a legacy game, was it?
For Paul George?
Yeah.
No. Definitely not.
Not a legacy game for Paul George because he has to win for his legacy. Durant doesn't have to. I don't even understand this. I need the rules.
Also, tonight we have legacy game number two for Kevin Durant.
No, it's not a legacy. I was told the legacy was cemented.
Okay.
2 days ago.
I get it now.
So
now
it's not a legacy game. This is just this game will have a regular season feel to it. By the way, 8 All-Star players have been hurt in the playoffs. LeBron's been talking about this.
LeBron was ranting about this on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah, he's been talking about it longer than that, but he was worried that, you know, we started the season. They had to start the season before, you know, basically, what is it, on Christmas Day? I think they started just before Christmas Day. there were 71 days between the title and the start. That's not a lot of time. Obviously, not every team had to deal with that, but
I mean, it wasn't ideal, right?
No.
But it was a pandemic, and right. The league had to get itself back on track. It was a weird year. It stunk for those teams.
Yeah.
I understand LeBron's concern mm-hmm. and complaint, but at the same time, you know, I think the league kind of had to do what it had to do in the middle of a global pandemic.
It's a pandemic.
Thank you, Boo Corrigan. Trey Wingo is that superstar utility player. He's an NFL expert, Pro Football Network, Have Forgotten History, the podcast. Also, PGA Tour Radio, very versatile, perfect for today. Mr. Wingo, how you doing?
Well, I love the comparison, except I don't have the contract that Albert has. So other than that, we're good.
Yeah, but you get to talk about football and golf all day. I can't think of a better thing.
Ain't bad.
Let's get to a couple of things here, because I think the reason I reached out to you, you put something up on Twitter, at Wingos, by the way, with a Z on the end of it, about Le'Veon Bell. So just want to quickly start there. I was a big fan. I mean, I supported Bell's decision to hold out because the Steelers were clearly never going to pay him. But it didn't work out, and now he's in the news for trashing Andy Reid, which he apologized for by not apologizing. Do you think he's going to play again?
I don't know. I mean, and just for people, like, it was a sort of a thing I put out there on Twitter, I should explain. It was a theoretical exercise, right? Because here was the premise real quickly. He walked away from I'm sorry, it's a little windy outside.
Sorry.
I apologize. He walked away from $14.5 million, okay? So that's a net minus $14.5 million to start, right? That's the way it works. Like, for example, Laremy Tunsil, when he was drafted, when that video came out of him smoking weed in a gas mask, he dropped 6 or 7 places.
Right.
He literally lost millions of dollars by that, okay? So that's the sort of theoretical standing point. He starts out going into the 2018, $14.5 million in the hole. So he signs that contract for the Jets, 4 years, $52 million, which he doesn't get but half of that. So he gets $28 million for 17 games with the Jets. And then, of course, he got $700 for playing 9 games with the Chiefs last year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 28.7. Take away the 14.5 that he was negative to start. And he really, if you look at it theoretically, he's made $14.2 million when he could have made 14.5 in 2018 alone if he had played.
Right.
And then gone on to make all this other money. You know, and people are like, oh, that's not real. I know it's not real math. It's just if you look at it that way, it's kind of how so ridiculous the last three years have been for Le'Veon Bell. It just makes no sense.
I almost wish that there was a Curt Flood-like benefit to what Le'Veon Bell did. Like, if that was challenging the reserve clause, because Flood's career ended, basically, as an effective player after challenging the reserve clause in Major League Baseball. And I think you're a St. Louis area guy, so that's a big deal for Cardinals fans. Flood was a great player, and he did the right thing by challenging the reserve clause, and he didn't realize the benefit, but everybody else did. Unfortunately, the NFL signed this collective bargaining agreement with the players that still has the franchise tag, so there was no benefit for everybody else to what Le'Veon Bell did. Let me ask you about Aaron Rodgers, and we're talking with Trey Wingo. We hear about an anonymous former NFL general manager who said that Aaron Rodgers is selfish, players don't like him, coaches don't like him, they just put up with him because he's great. This is the summer of gossip, apparently, with Aaron Rodgers. What's your take on A-Rod and all of this that's going on around him?
Well, let's address that story, because I addressed that on Twitter as well. I can't remember who put it out there, but look, why do you think this stuff is coming out? Okay? It's like stuff around the draft. And it's like every athlete that ever leaves the city of Boston. It's amazing how quickly they all get trashed once they leave the Red Sox, the Celtics,
right,
or the Patriots. Oh, he was no good anyway. So a couple things. First of all, that information is getting out there for a reason. So whoever's supplying him with that information wants that to get out there. Who does that benefit? That benefits the Green Bay Packers.
Right.
That narrative benefits the Green Bay Packers. So understand that is coming out from someone who wanted to get out there to benefit the Packers in this situation. So that's number one. Number two, name me a player that's great that isn't selfish. It's part of the job. you could argue that the greatest player in any team sport of all time was Michael Jeffrey Jordan. Was he difficult? Was he hard to work with? Was he selfish? Hell yes, he was. Dan Fouts, when he was the quarterback for the Chargers, would walk around practice with a hat that said MFIC on it. You know what that stood for?
I know the first part of it.
In charge. MF-er in charge. That's selfish. That's hard to get along with. They're all that way. It's part of the DNA that makes them great. So that's another thing you have to consider in all of this. Then there's the idea that Aaron Rodgers has divorced his family. He doesn't talk to anybody in the family that has his DNA
right.
because of some perceived slight. So if he's willing to cut off his own flesh and blood, do you really think if he feels slighted over and over again by the Green Bay Packers, that he's going back to a season ticket base that he might want to win over? Hell no. Listen, I do not think in any way, shape, or form that Aaron Rodgers is going to play for the Packers again. I think he's drawn that line in the sand, and there's some people that are willing to do it. Remember, Carson Palmer walked away from $50 million saying, I don't want to play for the Bengals anymore, and eventually he was traded to the Raiders. So it's just, from my perspective, it's not an if, it's a when, and I think the Packers are beginning to slowly come around to that point of it. When Mark Murphy, the president, says, well, you know, laugh, laugh, joke, 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 he's a complicated fella, and blah, 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 blah. So he's sort of, you know, they're getting there, and I think that eventually Aaron Rodgers will go somewhere else.
So do you really think that Rodgers is willing to sit out? Because it's not just sitting out this year and giving up the contract, it's also returning some bonus money. Is he willing to scratch that check to prove to Green Bay that he's not going to play?
Aaron Rodgers has made a ton of money, but you don't want to give up any money. But there are certain people, and that's why I brought up Carson Palmer,
right,
who believe certain things, and that's more important to them. And I do believe Aaron Rodgers is of that mindset. If that has to happen, I think he's okay with that because he's made a point. And again, it needs to be clear here. It's not just about the drafting of Jordan Love. It's a series of events that go back to the end of the 2017 season when they fired his quarterback coach without telling him, who he had a great relationship with for many, many years. And then he really wanted someone else to get the GM job, and it went to Gutekunst. And then they trade up in the first round to right. draft his replacement instead of giving him some more weapons. And then right before the start of last season, he went on and on extolling the virtues of wide receiver Jake Kumerow about as a player he can trust, and he's really come a long way, and he's going to be vital to us. And the day after that article came out, they cut him the next day. So I, whether it's right or wrong is irrelevant. It's where Aaron Rodgers' mindset is, and that's where he is, and he feels like he's ready to move on.
Yeah, I've talked about this. Trey Wingo is with us. I've talked about this from the angle that this is really 30 years of organizational failure from Green Bay. Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, and there was obviously the weird transition there. And they have won two Super Bowls and appeared in three, and they've been good otherwise. But it's just an organization that doesn't operate. And I think Rodgers is also jealous about what Tampa's doing. They don't seem to operate with a win at all cost when we have a quarterback of this magnitude mindset. And I wonder if Rodgers is looking around and he's a little jealous at that.
I think it certainly is the case. I mean, look, go back to the NFC champ. And by the way, let me just throw a little statistical sort of irony, coincidence, whatever you want to consider it. You know, he just played his 16th season as a starting quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. Bart Starr played 16 seasons for the Packers. Brett Favre started and played 16 seasons for the Green Bay Packers. No one's ever gone 17. And Brett Favre's last game as a Green Bay Packer was a home playoff loss in the NFC Championship game. And if Aaron Rodgers does walk away, his last playoff game, or last game as a Packer, will be a home playoff loss in the NFC Championship game. It's just kind of weirdly coincidental, however you want to look at it. But there is something to that, right? I mean, and it's kind of funny because what revived the Green Bay Packer franchise was the signing of Reggie White.
Right.
Getting Reggie White to leave the Eagles as a first true free agent and go to Green Bay, that sort of jump-started the franchise that had been moribund and basically dead. And now they're not doing much of that. And I think that is part of it. I think Rodgers, look at that team that Brady had around him. You know what I mean? They had 2,000-yard receivers the previous year. They get Gronk out of retirement. Eventually, they bring in Antonio Brown. I mean, that's okay. That's a lot more than he's had to work with in a long time. And mm-hmm. I think he just wants, an organization that, A, believes, listens to his opinion. I think he wants his opinions valued. And I don't think he feels like his opinions are valued in Green Bay.
Well, they have proven over and over again that they don't want his opinion. They might listen to it, but they will not listen to it, if you understand what I'm saying. Final thing.
Correct.
For Trey Wingo, who joins us here, Pro Football Network, Half Forgotten History, PGA Tour Radio. You are obviously a very interested viewer of this U.S. Open. Who you like?
Well, it's hard to go against three names, right? Because, Brooks obviously has won two of these things, and the course setup is very similar to how Bryson sort of took apart Wingfoot last August. So you got to start there. God, what a miracle gift that would be to all of us if they're in the final pairing on Sunday. It would just be manna from heaven. But there's a couple of the names I want to keep out there. One of them is Xander Schauffele. Now, Xander is from San Diego, and that's his home course, Torrey Pines. But he's never really had a lot of success at Torrey Pines, at the Farmers Insurance Open, when they play there every year. He's really struggled to make the cut. But he has played in four U.S. Opens in his career, and he has four top 10 finishes in four U.S. Open starts. The only last player to do that in golf was Bobby Jones. So this is the kind of consistent U.S. Open play we've seen out of Xander Schauffele. And it might be that he cracks the code on his fifth try at a U.S. Open, and of course that he knows better than almost anybody.
He is certainly a good piece. He's a great young player, and he's going to be a great player for a long time. Trey Wingo, I appreciate your time. We will talk again very soon. Follow him on Twitter, at Wingos with a Z on the end. I Have Forgotten History, the podcast. Go check out the YouTube channel there. We'll talk again soon, sir. Thanks.
You got it, Adam. Take care.
John Wertheim is with Sports Illustrated, also the Tennis Channel, and he is an author, so many books. Glory Days is the latest, the summer of 1984, and the 90 days that changed sports and culture forever. The cover is awesome. Michael Jordan in a USA basketball uniform. You got Mary Lou Retton. We got Bruce Springsteen. We got Prince. I didn't even know where to start, so I'll let you start. What's the motivation, the driving force behind it?
Oh, man. the motivation is basically, when I was in middle school, Michael Jordan and Barkley and John Stockton and Patrick Ewing, they all came to my hometown for the Olympic tryouts. This is when the players would go to where the coach was. Bob Knight was the coach. And I wrote a story about it in Sports Illustrated. Someone said, you should make it a book. I said, I don't know if there's a whole book to be written on the 1984 Olympic basketball team. But the more I poked around, the more I realized all the other stuff that was going on this summer. So that was sort of the idea is kind of, Michael Jordan figures prominently, and the thesis is basically, Michael Jordan starts that summer as this college kid in flip flops who actually wants to stay at UNC for his senior year. Yep. His coach Dean Smith, his parents basically say, you got to go pro. Jordan doesn't even want to go to the NBA. By the end of the summer, he's the third pick in the draft. He's got a gold medal. He's got a signature shoe deal. He's driving around Chicago in a limo in the same way he started the summer and ended it at two very different places. I try to make the case. Same goes for sports.
Yeah, the best story that came out of that Olympics is Bobby Knight trying to convince, and I'm assuming it was Dr. Jack Ramsey, who had already drafted Clyde Drexler, and Dr. Jack said, I need a center. And then Bobby Knight famously said, then play Jordan at center. You have to draft this guy. But there was so much else that was going on that summer. Some of it's close to your wheelhouse. That was probably the summer, maybe the best of John McEnroe as well. And that's the era of tennis that I grew up in. Before I'm going to fold this back to tennis at some point. But that was a pretty golden age right there.
You had John McEnroe and Martina Navratilova both at the peaks of their powers, and you'd go back and read these, you'd go back and read the newspaper from those days, and it would literally be, Magic and Bird head to game seven, Phenom Mike Tyson to fight tonight, and John McEnroe, wins Wimbledon. I mean, just every boom, 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 boom. Every single day seemed to bring a new event where you say 37 years later, you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Or, oh, yeah, I could see how important that was. And, yeah, good summer for tennis. Great. I mean, a great summer for David Stern is the new commissioner. Mm-hmm. One of his – he's sort of tasked with, hey, you got to energize this league. People don't know about basketball. It's number four among the big four. I mean, it's lower than hockey. And David Stern, first few months on the job, gets, you know, a game seven between Magic and Bird, and a week later, Jordan Olajuwon and Charles Barkley all get drafted at the draft he presides over. Pretty good start on the job for David Stern that summer, too.
John Wertheim from Sports Illustrated and Tennis Channel and the author of Glory Days, the summer of 1984. Wait, did you say newspaper?
Yeah, remember those?
In terms of the culture of that summer, because you've got Springsteen, and that was probably, I think that was probably the height of Springsteen right there. Wasn't that, pretty much Born in the USA time?
Yeah, right. I mean, Born in the USA came out that summer, and I remember like Courtney Cox. I don't know, I'm sure you're younger
sure.
than I am, but, you know.
No, I'm not,
Courtney
actually.
Cox is the video, and, but yeah, I mean, the other thing too, that people forget, you know, there are three TV networks and they're all running reruns in the summer. So people are really into music. Or when you release a movie like Ghostbusters or, you know, Karate Kid or the John Hughes movies, when those came out in 1984, people were really into going to the movies. There were not, as many, you know, you didn't have all these niches that you have today. So when something happened, like an Olympics or, you know, I write a bunch about this wrestling card that sort of gave birth to WrestleMania. When something happened, like an album release, the whole country knew about it. Just because there was so, you know, there weren't as many channels, there weren't mm-hmm. as many networks, there wasn't Spotify. So when you had Bruce Springsteen, hey, Bruce Springsteen has a new album, and here's the, you know, Born in the USA, and here's the video. Everyone in the United States knew about it, bought it, had an opinion about it. So I think you had much more of these sort of forces that binded the country.
John Wertheim is joining us here on The Adam Gold Show. I am older than you because I was a high school graduate in 1984. I was not in middle school. You made me feel old, but that's fine. It doesn't bother me one bit because I feel young. So I want to ask you this because I know at heart, you're a tennis guy. I've already brought up tennis. So I thought that the Friday-Sunday French Open was about as good as you're going to get in terms of drama. Djokovic, Nadal, Djokovic coming back from two sets down to Tsitsipas to win, I guess, a second career Grand Slam. Are these the three best players, Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer, are these the three best players in one order or another that have ever played?
I'll say male just to keep
yes.
us safe.
Yes, you're right, because I have already.
I don't know. I mean, I always say, imagine you're Pete Sampras, and 20 years ago, you retire, you've won more majors than anyone else. You know, it's like Wilt Chamberlain's 100 point, like 14 majors. That's crazy. You retire and you figure, you are atop the mountain. Pete Sampras has yet to turn 50. I mean, he's 49 years mm-hmm. old, and he's number four on that list and a distant four. And, you know, they've all won the career slam, and he never did. I mean, I think, yeah, absolutely. The fact, you know, you got these three guys, they're all playing at the same time. Everyone says, like, oh, it's this golden age, this amazing era. And I think we lose sight of the fact that it's not a coincidence that Federer set the bar and the other two guys knew exactly what they had to do if they wanted to be in the conversation. And now all three of them are still playing. I think in large part, you know, if Nadal and Djokovic don't exist, is Roger Federer really still out there at age 39? I mean, I think we all say, like, oh, it's this incredible coincidence, but I don't think it's a coincidence at all. I mean, I think it's a really interesting kind of lens into competition. But long answer to a short question. Yes, these are the three best players, and we'll figure out the pecking order. But I don't think they're. I think these three guys are 1, 2, 3 in some order.
I mean, to me, it's amazing, and I've loved watching all three. I'm a Roger guy at heart, but I think the best argument to surpass him is probably Djokovic for the versatility. Look, Nadal on clay, 105-3. Could you even fathom yeah. that record at the French Open?
That is goofy, and the fact that he loses
to the number one seed at age 35, and it's like, shocker, upset of the year. I think a lot of us, I think a lot of fans invested in Federer early, and he was so graceful, and he was so cool, and he was so easy to like as a human being. And I think that Djokovic really suffers. Someone had a pretty good comparison. They said it's like Bad Boy Pistons. Like you were either Magic or Bird, and you kind of liked them both, and they had a nice thing going. And then, these bad boys have to come and like ruin everything. I feel like Djokovic suffers a lot for being the third guy on the scene.
He was certainly he was the road team on Sunday at the French Open for sure. Final thing, because you alluded to it, would it be fair if we decided at the end of all of it to say the greatest player of all time is Serena?
Yeah, exactly. Let's shift. You mean shifting the focus from the men?
No, not just shifting it from the men, but just saying overall.
Serena Williams has won 23 majors in singles, 14 in doubles.
Mm-hmm.
She won her first major in the 90s. But, Bill Clinton, I think, congratulated her. And she won her most recent one in the Trump presidency. I mean, I think maybe this is the way to get us out of all this. Just say Serena's the best overall. She's atop the mountain. Then we get out of the Djokovic, Federer, Nadal conversation. I like that.
John Wertheim, Sports Illustrated, and Tennis Channel, of course, the author of Glory Days, the Summer of 1984, and the 90 Days That Changed Sports and Culture Forever. There's something in it for everyone. I appreciate your time, sir. We'll talk again.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app. Or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.